Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors or design your own using our free garage door designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big and ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Hi guys, and welcome back to Crime and Crime Again. This is episode 2, and this episode will mark the beginning of a long series that I would like to do on this podcast that discusses the cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women, and that might be better known by its acronym, MMIW. This refers to the alarming rates of violence committed against Indigenous women across the United States and Canada. As a preface to the case that we'll be talking about today, I wanted to offer up some statistics that give you a better look at this epidemic across the US and Canada and why it is so important that we discuss this. I do want to place a trigger warning here because I will be talking about acts of violence committed against women. Those acts of violence include physical assault, homicide, sexual assault, and rape. In Canada, from 2001 to 2015, Aboriginal women were murdered at a rate almost 6 times higher than the rate at which non-Aboriginal women were murdered. In 2009, 13% of all Aboriginal women age 15 and older stated that they had been the victims of a violent crime. Aboriginal women make up 4% of all women in Canada, yet they make up 22% of homicides committed against women in 2017. And lastly, Aboriginal women are 3 times more likely to be violently victimized by a male partner than non-Aboriginal women. So today, we'll be discussing the case of Amber Tuckerow, an Indigenous mother who disappeared and then was later found to have been murdered. She's gone without justice for over 10 years. So let's get into it. Amber Alyssa Tuckerow was born on January 3, 1990, and she was adopted by the Tuckerow family as an infant. The Tuckerows are members of the Mikisew Cree First Nation. The Tuckerow family lived in Fort Chipewyan for a time before relocating to Fort McMurray, a small town situated in northeastern Alberta, Canada. Amber was the only girl in the family, as she had older brothers, and she had a very close relationship with her mother, Vivian Tootsie Tuckerow. She was described as being confident and courageous, she had a witty attitude, and she was known for being a bright light in her family. In the summer of 2009, Amber gave birth to a baby boy named Jacob. She was described as being a loving, attentive mother, and she took motherhood very seriously. Now, with a bit of background into Amber, we can start to get into the timeline that led to her disappearance, and then the timeline that ultimately led to her later being found. On August 16, 2010, an acquaintance of Amber's invited her to go on a trip with her into the city of Edmonton. Vivian says that she suggested that Amber leave Jacob with her, but Amber insisted that it was only a couple of nights and it would be fine. On August 17, 2010, Amber, Jacob, and the friend who had invited her all flew from Fort McMurray to Edmonton International Airport. Once they arrived in Edmonton, they actually got a motel in a town called Nisku. They got a motel room in Nisku because it was much cheaper to stay here than it would be to stay in the actual city of Edmonton. At some point in the evening of August 18, 2010, Amber decided that she wanted to head into the city alone, and her friend agrees to watch Jacob at the motel while she's gone. To this day, it's still unknown why exactly Amber wanted to go into the city alone. No one seems to have an answer even 10 years later. To save cash, she planned to hitchhike into the city. And this is something that Amber allegedly did frequently. She was known as courageous, she was fearless, and she had an adventurous spirit. She wasn't really afraid of anything. Hitchhiking is something that Vivian had actually warned Amber about before her trip. She had told her that it's too dangerous, and she had warned her not to get into any vehicles with anyone she didn't know. Authorities have estimated that sometime between 7:30 and 8:30 p.m., On the evening of August 18th, Amber was in fact hitchhiking and did get into a vehicle with a strange man. It's alleged that she was physically seen getting into this vehicle, but to this day, the description of that vehicle has never been released, if she was ever even seen getting into the vehicle in the first place. Now, from this point, Vivian is the one who provides the timeline that led up to them discovering that Amber was in fact missing. According to Vivian, on the night of August 18th, after she'd had trouble reaching Amber, she reached out to the friend. Vivian had been in constant contact with Amber from the time she left Fort McMurray to go on this trip. Amber had been updating her on how the trip was going. She, again, was very responsive to her messages. So right off the bat, it did concern Vivian to a degree that she couldn't reach Amber. On the morning of August 19th, Vivian says that she received a text message from this friend asking, quote, "Jacob's grandma?" with a question mark, end quote. Upon receiving this message, she called the friend right away. This is when the friend tells her that Amber, quote unquote, took off in the middle of the night. Right then, Vivian knew something was wrong. Amber would never intentionally disappear and leave her son behind. She was a devoted mother, she adored her son, and she loved being a mom. She wouldn't just up and leave him, and she wouldn't just not respond to her mother. Immediately, Vivian called the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, aka the RCMP. This is when things start going downhill, right from the very beginning. The RCMP tells Vivian that Amber is, quote, "probably out partying and will return her calls later," end quote. She says they also told her that she would have to wait 24 hours to file a missing persons report. I did some research into this, as I've heard conflicting things regarding this fact. Based on the research that I did, the idea that you have to wait 24 hours or 48 hours to file a missing persons report is not true. It's a myth. And I did look this up specifically for Canada in this case. You do not have to wait any set amount of time before you can file a missing persons report. Vivian was finally able to list Amber as a missing person on August 20th, 2010. Allegedly, on August 28th, 2010, a constable with the RCMP recommended that Amber be removed from the missing persons list, and he did so because there had been a call from a man claiming to have seen Amber somewhere in the city. Various sources have stated that this constable never actually verified this reported sighting. Amber was in fact removed from the missing persons list. It took Vivian a month to get her put back on the list. It was later learned that the RCMP didn't even interview Vivian until 4 months after Amber's disappearance. And this is where the case hits a dead end. Beyond this point, nothing is found. No clues or pieces of evidence are found to indicate where Amber might have gone or where she might be. There's no traceable phone activity. There's nothing. The case, at this point, hits a complete dead end, and it stays like this for over 2 years. In late August of 2012, there's a break in the case. Finally, there is some piece of evidence as to what may have happened to Amber. The RCMP released a recording of a phone call in which you can hear Amber and an unknown male talking. Several different YouTubers and podcasters have played this audio clip in their media, so I am also going to go ahead and play the audio clip for you. I do want to place a trigger warning here, as this audio recording might be distressing for some people. There is nothing violent in the recording, but it is very unsettling to listen to. So skip ahead by about 1 minute if you don't wish to hear it. I'm going to go ahead and play the clip now.
Where are we by?
We're just heading south of Beaumont, or north of Beaumont.
We're heading north of Beaumont. Yo, where are we going? No, this is a... Are you fucking kidding me?
Why not?
You better not take me anywhere I don't want to go. I want to go into the city. Jeez. Yo, we're not going into the city, are we? No, we're not.
Yes.
Then where are these roads going to?
50th Street.
50th Street. Are you sure?
Absolutely.
Yo, where are we going?
50th Street.
East, right?
East.
It's a Grover town.
Bravo.
Bravo.
It it was learned that this call was made by Amber's brother, who was in Edmonton Remand Center at the time. And, of course, all outgoing calls by inmates are recorded. So that is how the RCMP obtained this recording. It was also later learned that the RCMP was in possession of this recording for over a year before releasing it to the public. The entire call is actually 17 minutes long, but the authorities only released 61 seconds, stating that the rest of the call was not relevant to Amber's case and was not relevant to the investigation. Vivian has actually heard the entire call, and she says that in the beginning, Amber sounded normal and happy. She was laughing, and she did not seem to be fearful. She did not seem that she was in any kind of danger. Very quickly after this recording was released to the public, three women came forward separately, claiming to know who the male voice on the recording belonged to. All three women identified the same man. The first woman even said that she, quote, knew the voice like the back of my hand, end quote. For some time, the name of the man that these three women identified was not released to the public. But various communities on the internet did some digging, and they discovered the name of this man. As a disclaimer here, I am certainly not the first person to name this man in a video or a podcast or any other media. He has been named on the internet numerous times, so I am going to go ahead and share his name with you. And that man's name is Pat Carson. Pat Carson is notorious for his creepy behavior and trying to lure people into his vehicle to come work at his ranch. There are multiple stories about experiences that people have had with this man. These stories have been posted on Reddit. There is an entire forum dedicated solely to sharing these stories, and there is a blog dedicated to spreading awareness about this man and warning people to stay away from him. You can easily find that blog with a quick Google search. One story in particular was shared 5 years ago on the Reddit community r/letsnotmeet. It was written by a woman who had an uncomfortable experience at the ranch while working with Pat Carson. You can easily read the entire story. It is still posted on Reddit, and you can find it with a quick Google search very easily. But I will sum it up for you here and provide a couple of excerpts from the story. This woman shares that she and her husband had recently gotten married, and they wanted to have some adventures before settling down. They found an online listing searching for workers to come and work on a ranch where meals and lodging would be provided in exchange for their work. She says that the pictures were beautiful and they included many photos featuring other people. And the person who made these listings told her that other people did, in fact, live there and work there. However, when they arrived, they discovered that there was nobody there. It was just them. She says the man was in his 60s. And he often talked about how he never judged people based on their past. He even once asked them, quote, "Do you believe people can change? I sure do," end quote. One of the first things that made her uncomfortable about being here was that because he had built the house himself, this man's bedroom had a door that led to the only upstairs bathroom. And many women in stories featured on forums about this man have stated that they could hear him lingering outside of this bathroom door while they bathed or showered. Also in his bedroom was an old video camera with multiple tapes strewn around it. She also tells of how this man would often say that everyone who had stayed there before left unexpectedly, out of the blue. She shares one experience in particular that really ignited her suspicions about this man. She says that one day he told them to come with him to the city, and that they were going to look for people to come work at the ranch with them. She says that he told them to ask young people around the city to come and work with them on the ranch. The woman says that this made them super uncomfortable, and he was upset by their reluctance, so they simply pretended to look for people to talk to. He actually did go out and talk to people on his own. The woman says, quote, "I didn't really find him creepy, but intolerable. I didn't like him at all. He seemed extremely socially inept and said inappropriate things," end quote. She goes on to say, quote, "It was also extremely apparent that he did not view women as equal or anywhere near equal to men," end quote. She says that he would tell them daily about how they could live there permanently and start a family. At one point, the woman receives an email from her mother alerting her to the danger that this man posed. She promptly makes up a lie about an emergency, giving her an excuse to leave, and she says that it seemed like the man knew that she was lying. That it seemed like he knew she was going to come up with an excuse to leave before she had ever thought to do it. Pat Carson did have prior convictions. He was actually released from a correctional center in 2003 after serving a sentence. His prior convictions include sexual assault, procuring juvenile prostitutes, and choking a woman. This information was eventually posted by the blog I mentioned before that is solely dedicated to warning people about Pat Carson. The worst part about this is that he is still doing this today. He is still posting ads looking for ranch workers. He frequently changes the name of the ranch in these ads, and he's known to use multiple online aliases. After these women identified Pat Carson as the man on the recording, the RCMP did investigate. However, they've stated that after investigating, they found no connection between Pat Carson and Amber Tuckerow, and they could find nothing connecting him to her disappearance.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
He was cleared as a person of interest in Amber's disappearance, and he has not been listed officially as a person of interest or a suspect in her case since. Many do not agree that the RCMP investigated Pat thoroughly. Again, this audio recording is virtually the only piece of evidence that was found. You can hear the fear in Amber's voice. You can hear the confusion in her voice. It's almost like she knows that the driver is up to something. I don't believe that Amber was familiar with the area, but it does sound like somehow she knows that the roads that he's driving along are not taking her in the direction that she intended. Amber sounds upset when she says, "Where are we by?" It seems like she's beginning to become concerned about where exactly this man is taking her. And the man responds with 50th Street. Amber then asks, 50th Street, are you sure? And the way that this man said, absolutely, when he responded, sent chills down my spine. He sounds sarcastic. He sounds like he's mocking her. For me, that was definitely the most unsettling part of the audio to listen to, even though it was just one word. This audio recording is thought to be the very last time that Amber was ever heard from again. It's widely believed that the man driving and talking to Amber in the recording is the very last person to have ever seen Amber alive, and very likely the person who took her life. On September 1st, 2012, 4 days after the recording was released to the public, horseback riders discovered the partial remains of a human skull in a farmer's field in a rural area of Leduc County. This was in an area very close to the motel where Amber was last known to be. The remains were quickly identified via dental records by Edmonton Medical Examiner's Office as the remains of Amber Tuckerow. After the remains were found, a 2-day search of the area ensued, but nothing further was found. No clothes, no DNA, no cell phone, no belongings, nothing. 4 other women besides Amber went missing and were later found within an 8-kilometer radius of one another, and this radius does include the location where Amber's remains were found. Edna Bernard went missing September 22, 2002, and she was found the next day. She was of the Whitefish Lake First Nation. Katie Sylvia Ballantyne went missing April 28, 2003, and she was found July 7, 2003. She was of the Apasquiak Cree Nation. Dolores Brower went missing May 15, 2004, and she was found April 19, 2015. Lastly, Corey Ottenbright went missing May 9, 2004, and she was found April 19, 2015. So it is important to note, based on the premise of this discussion, that 3 of those women were Indigenous. This is five women, including Amber, who were found at different points in time, who had gone missing at different points in time, that were found within an 8-kilometer radius of one another. It has been theorized by many that Edmonton may have a serial killer on their hands, but this has never been confirmed. Amber's remains were discovered about 15 to 17 minutes away from the motel in Nisku, where she was staying with her friend and her son. That is of note because, again, the entire phone call was 17 minutes long. So this phone call would have lasted the duration of a drive from the motel where Amber was staying to the farmer's field where her remains were later located. And of course, this fact even further led authorities to believe that the man in this recording had something to do with Amber's disappearance and murder. It's believed that the unknown man was driving Amber southeast along countryside roads in rural Leduc County and not toward Edmonton where she had intended to go. It's later learned that Amber's belongings that she had left at the motel had been left unprocessed for months before they were ultimately destroyed. Vivian was not even given her daughter's belongings. They were not returned to her. And she has said that some of those belongings held sentimental value. On March 20th, 2014, Amber's family filed a complaint against the RCMP with the Civilian Review and Complaints Commission for how they mishandled Amber's case. Even from the point that Vivian was trying to simply file a missing persons report because she knew her daughter was missing, and they told her that her daughter was probably out partying, they wouldn't even allow her to file a missing persons report for over 24 hours, even though you do not have to wait any set amount of time to file a report. Let's not forget that Amber was removed from the missing persons list for over a month because a call was received claiming to have seen her, a reported sighting that apparently was never even verified. The fact that they hadn't even processed her belongings from the motel where she was staying, and then they eventually destroyed them. They didn't even return her belongings to her mother. Personally, I find the way that the authorities handled this case to be grossly irresponsible. The way they went about this investigation was an egregious lack of compassion, and they had very little regard for the family or the victim. The family was assured that the investigation into their complaint would take no more than 18 months, but it actually ended up taking 4 years. In 2018, a 120-page report was completed. They claimed to have found deficiencies in the original investigation into Amber's case. However, they also claimed that they found no evidence of racial bias by the RCMP in the case, and they have never made the full report public. Finally, in 2019, the RCMP held a press conference that Amber's mother, Vivian, attended and spoke at, where they issued the family a public apology. The commissioner said, quote, "I fully acknowledge that in the early days of the investigation into Amber's disappearance, that it required a better sense of urgency and care," end quote. He goes on to say, quote, "On behalf of the RCMP, I am truly sorry," end quote. Vivian is given a chance to respond to this at the press conference, and she says, quote, "An apology needs to be heartfelt, not just words," end quote. And in the middle of her continuing to speak and respond to this apology, those from the RCMP in attendance got up and left in the middle of her speaking. They later cited previously scheduled obligations. Vivian goes on to say, quote, "They're the ones apologizing, yet they can get up and walk away. I am very angry," end quote. She has every right to be furious at the way that her daughter's case was handled, right from the get-go. The lack of care, the lack of urgency, the mishandling of potential evidence, and the utter disrespect displayed by the RCMP at this press conference where they attempted to issue a public apology. On January 24th, 2020, a man contacted RCMP claiming that he was convinced his father was responsible for Amber's murder, as well as the murders of many other women in the area. RCMP responded to this claim, and after an investigation, they found his claim to be unsubstantiated, and they've stated that the man had made several similar claims in the past. In fact, some of the murders that he was convinced his father was responsible for had already been solved. In September 2019, the Tuckerow family filed to have Amber's remains exhumed and her DNA retested against their own, as they have had doubts that the remains are hers. This comes from a justified foundation of mistrust with the authorities. The family has had doubts about the remains having been identified so quickly, and the family also states that there are discrepancies between the dental records that they used to identify Amber's remains and dental work that she has had done. As of now, in August 2020, they have not yet received a response to this request. Amber's family has worked tirelessly. They have fought from day one to bring Amber justice. They dedicated themselves to searching for her before she was found, and after she was found, they dedicated themselves to finding who was responsible for her death. Not only that, but they've been fighting an uphill battle with the authorities for over 10 years now. In October 2010, Amber was one of the women honored during the Edmonton Sisters in Spirit Stolen Sisters Awareness March. This march was meant to protest violence against Indigenous women. In 2011, the Tuckerow Family and Stolen Sisters Awareness Organization hosted an Amber Alyssa Tuckerow Awareness Walk, followed by a vigil. In January 2015, the second annual Amber Alyssa Tuckerow Memorial Round Dance was held in Fort Chippewa. In February 2015, Vivian traveled to Ottawa for the first ever roundtable into Canada's missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. There, she and many other families met with representatives from six different Indigenous organizations and two federal cabinet ministers. Amber's brother Paul participated in this national inquiry over 2 years later, along with his wife. On Mother's Day 2015, Stolen Sisters celebrated Amber by putting up posters around Leduc County and laying flowers near the site where her remains were found. In November 2016, a justice rally for Stolen Sisters was held in honor of the women who had been found murdered in Leduc County since 2002. The goal of this rally was to raise awareness and urge the RCMP to solve these cases. In 2017, the Tuckerow family announces an increase to the existing $5,000 reward for information about Amber's disappearance. Also in 2017, they created the Justice for Amber Tuckerow Facebook page. Amber's family, along with many others, continue to fight for the missing and murdered Indigenous women of the United States and Canada every single day. They work tirelessly, they hold rallies, they hold marches, they hold vigils, they speak with representatives. They are trying to get something done. So I encourage you to share these Facebook pages, attend these events that are held, even contact your representatives about this epidemic. It's important to be an uplifting voice and to help these families fight for justice for the Indigenous people who are stolen and who are forgotten by the authorities, by the people who are supposed to help bring justice. Time and again, we see a lack of urgency and a lack of compassion when it comes to cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people. It's a pattern that needs to be brought to an end. Although it's been over 10 years, the RCMP believes that reiterating Amber's appearance at the time that she went missing might help to jog someone's memory and might help someone come forward with some information. At the time of her disappearance on August 18, 2010, from the Edmonton Nisku area of Alberta, Canada, Amber Tuckerow was 5'6" and approximately 144 pounds. She was of the Mikisew Cree First Nation. She had black hair with blonde streaks and brown eyes. She was believed to have been wearing a purple hoodie. If you think you might have any information regarding Amber's disappearance or her murder, please contact the Alberta RCMP at 780-412-5261, the Leduc RCMP at 780-980-7267, Project CARE at 1-877-412-5273 or 780-509-3356, or you can leave tips anonymously with Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Crime Again Pod, and you can also like the Facebook page, Crime and Crime Again Podcast. We also have a Facebook discussion group, Crime and Crime Again Podcast Discussion. for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.